If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Michigan's Man of the Year to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the magic words fallacy, also known as caveating. Now, this is episode 154, which is divisible by 11.
That's right.
So this is one that, I've prevented you from saying one you've made up. Well, this is one you've identified.
This is one I've identified, yeah, and given two names because it felt right.
Yes, exactly. Because some of the other ones, they sound more real.
Yes.
Do you know what? That in itself is a magic words thing.
In a way.
Isn't it? You put the...
Yeah. Because this fallacy is basically when people use a specific type of phrase or set of words that then somehow either lends more weight to what they're saying or kind of gives them cover for saying something wrong or bad. Usually the latter.
Right.
It's usually the fact that they've said something that is unacceptable, but because they've used a specific word or phrase,
the magic word,
then they reckon they can get away with it.
Right, kind of renders it inoffensive.
Exactly. So our first example.
Well, they think they can.
First example is from Trump, and this is an old interview from 1994.
I don't want to sound too much like a chauvinist, but when I come home and dinner's not ready, I go through the roof, okay?
So when you say that, you're saying, don't pay attention to the meaning of these words, because that's not what I mean by them. That's not my intent, is what I'm about to say. Yeah. What it absolutely means and what you would understand if I didn't give you this caveat is totally not actually my intent, even though it very much is.
And it kind of hinges around that but.
Yeah.
I once edited a series of kind of late night serious political discussion programs about the new Libyan constitution in Arabic, and I learned the Arabic for but, which is lekan. So you could get, and a politician would start talking, and then they get to lekan, and then they would say something else. So you think, well, I could leave all that first bit out, because that's the stuff that's caveating what they're about to say, the other side of the but. So I would check with my translator and said, can I just leave that bit out, because they've just said but there, haven't they? So I could leave that bit out, because That's excusing.
That's
what
the politician
about to say.
Bit. Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. Now let's get the bit there when they're actually saying what they're saying. So that was a good rule of thumb. Yeah.
So our second example is from Ted Yoho, who had a confrontation with AOC on the steps outside of the Capitol. He called her a fucking bitch. And that was reported on.
As you do. Yeah.
And he wanted to address the reporting of what he had said.
The offensive name-calling words attributed to me by the press were never spoken to my colleagues. And if they were construed that way, I apologize for their misunderstanding.
So this is a non-apology apology.
Yeah.
I didn't do it, but if I did do it, what I apologize for is not doing it, but for them misunderstanding the thing I did.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm apologizing for their error.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Not saying I did do the thing that you said that I did. I'm apologizing for the fact if, and well, I've got similar examples of that non-apology, which seems to be
very common among politicians.
I don't know whether we've spotted it a lot, but it's a very politician non-apology, isn't it? Yeah, where they look like they've apologized. They've made an apology shaped statement.
Yeah,
but they've not apologized for it, and they're very rarely called out on that.
Yeah, our final example in this section is an example of a wide group of people called sovereign citizens who seem to think that if you say the right words, you can get away with all kinds of crimes. And this is one who's in front of a judge. On Zoom, this is because it's during the pandemic, and he has a go.
All right. At the Butler County Jail, are you Anthony Dubas?
Sir, I would like to state for the record and correct that I am not the all caps name on the paper. I am the proper case trade name, sole living heir, beneficiary, and executor of that named trust. I am the living man. I am a foreign national, and I'm a foreign national. I'm an American national. I am here by special appearance only, held against my will, under duress, in false imprisonment, and under false arrest.
Very good. This is State of Kansas versus Anthony Edward Dubas. Count 3 alleges you operated a motor vehicle on August 17th, 2023 in Butler County, Kansas without having valid insurance. That's no proof of insurance, a Class B non-person misdemeanor. Do you understand your charges, Mr. Dubas?
No, I do not stand under these charges, and I would like to make it clear that I was not operating a motor vehicle. I was operating my private conveyance, not for hire, not for commercial use, not to transport passengers or products for hire.
This is really, really typical of sovereign citizens.
Yeah.
Especially the ones who you'll probably most often see these if you watch any sovereign citizen videos on YouTube, which are all them failing to game the legal system, and exactly. And most of them are trying to get away with driving without a license or without insurance, and the reason that they are constantly in court for that is because they claim that traveling in your personal conveyance is not driving a car, because if you use the right words then it's not against the law. So
it
when
sounds
the,
like something out of Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
Yeah. So when the police pull them over and say, "Can I see your driving license?" They say, "I don't have one. I'm not required to have one because I'm not driving. I'm traveling, which is a fundamental right of all citizens." So
the thing is, it looks exactly the same as driving without a license.
Very much. Yeah. It's hard to tell the difference.
Given that the laws that are applied to the road that you're joining in the activities on, what you're doing looks exactly like what everybody else is doing. So forgive us as the law enforcement officers for applying that law to what you're doing and trying you on that basis. But as a sovereign citizen, he just went, I'm not the all caps person on the thing. I am the sole trader.
The living man. The living man and sole heir beneficiary
of the proper case.
Yeah. So, yeah, they think that your name that is assigned to you by the government or something in all caps when you're indicted, whatever, is
right.
That's not you. That's a fiction, a legal fiction. And that means, so that when the judge says, are you this person?
Right.
The answer is yes. Yeah. But the answer that sovereign citizens give is extremely convoluted. And it never, ever works. There is not one instance on YouTube or anywhere of a sovereign citizen saying the right words and a judge going,
yeah,
case dismissed, oh, yeah, I guess. Enough. Nothing we can do about this then. In fact, there's one brilliant one where the guy says that he's the attorney of note, which isn't a thing, for the name that he's the guy the judge is asking about. And he says, okay, in that case, this person who is supposed to be up in front of the court hasn't shown up today. So I'm issuing a warrant for his arrest. Thanks very much.
Excellent.
Yeah, because there's judges who see this time and time and time again, and they have had enough of it, and they have no more fucks to give.
Yeah. I mean, has anybody ever successfully got...
I've never seen one. I watched a few to find the right clips. If it had successfully worked,
it would be all over YouTube, wouldn't it?
Because it isn't real. The ideas that they have about what the right words are to use don't make any sense. Yeah. There aren't legal magic words. There is the right procedure that you have to follow if you represent yourself in court, and there are, you know, the things that you have to do, but there aren't specific words you can use to get round a procedure that is required of you.
Yeah.
And that's what they reckon. They reckon that the USA doesn't really exist because, you know, everything's under the Confederacy like that. Because it's a corporation, the USA,
corporation,
and everything's under maritime law, and there's gold fringes on the flags. And if they say just the right thing, they can get away with not actually paying taxes or having driving licenses or doing all kinds of things. And a lot of these things are trivial and inconsequential to them. They could easily do it. You know, having a driving license, you have to pay to do it, and you have to take your test and everything like this. But a lot of these people, they've passed their driving test, they've got a license, and they've just let their license expire and not renewed it because they're kind of waiting. They're excited about when they're going to get pulled over so they can start, they can try this thing. And they'll have sheaves of paper in their car with the right words to say to the cop who pulls them over. And they refuse to get out of their car. And there's so many videos of people just the police smashing the window and dragging the people out of the car, and the sovereign citizen is going, "I do not submit. Stand down, stand down." And it's obviously not working because that doesn't stop a policeman from arresting you when you've committed a crime. Yeah.
Exactly. The amount of energy they must put into researching all of the magic words. They could have applied for their license five times over and just gone down the DMV and pick one up.
But they think they're winning.
Yeah, yeah. Because the other end of the spectrum of the magic words application is Trump, who just says, well, no, it doesn't apply to me. I don't have to do that because, I've got immunity. And what he's doing is, instead of ignoring the laws of the land, he's changing the laws of the land by using the magic words.
It's a different kind of magic he's got there.
Built into,
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
We're going to look first at Nigel Farage's Reform Party, which, pretty much like his Brexit Party and UKIP before that, seems to attract members/candidates that have racist and homophobic views. Not to put too fine a point on it, this time round, three Reform candidates were ejected from the party, eventually, for racist and homophobic comments that caught on film during the campaign for the general election that's just gone. Andy Bell on Channel 5 News asked Farage about this on 2nd of July 2024. And in doing so, his second question conjures up a very Mrs. Merton-esque turn of phrase, to which Farage applies several incantations of magic words in response.
There are some people there that ought not to be there. That's not reflective
of me, the party, or the vast majority of people.
Well, it's interesting you use the phrase vast majority. Georgie David, the candidate of yours in East London who's just withdrawn, says the vast majority of candidates for reform are racist, misogynistic and bigoted.
Well, she wouldn't know, would she? She probably
was one of your candidates. Until
Again, I just discovered earlier on today she was what the party called a democracy candidate, i.e. would anyone please stand?
Well, look, it's not a great look, is it, that these candidates seem to keep coming along and you keep having to disown them. You know, what is it about your party that is attracting these
people? Don't ask me. I wasn't there. I wasn't part of it.
But you're the
leader. I am now. Oh, yes, yeah. I am now.
So there's four counts there. One is, well, she wouldn't know. I don't know why she wouldn't know, but just saying, well, she wouldn't know means that they go, oh, yeah, no, you're right, and you back off.
Yeah.
She was a candidate. She knew that, she states that, yeah, the vast majority were racist, homophobes, and misogynists. And he said, well, she wouldn't know. What? Yeah, but she's one of your candidates. Oh, yeah, but she was just she wasn't a real candidate. She was a democracy. She was a paper candidate. She was a democracy. You would want somebody want to stand.
Yeah, that's more of a no true candidate now.
Yes, exactly, yeah. A never reformer, a never Farager. Yeah, and then, I wasn't there then. I knew nothing about it. I wasn't there, and I wasn't the leader. So all of these are get out clauses in answer to his Merton-esque, what is it about your party that seems to attract racists and homophobes? I was looking at somebody talking to him about the Brexit Party, and there were three or four candidates then who were accused of the same kind of views. And then he said, oh, well, we're a startup, you can have teething problems, blah, 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 blah. So he is the master of the magic words.
Yeah.
And they're just excuses to allow this kind of stuff. And when, you know, what did he say recently? He blamed the Russians' invasion of Ukraine on Europe. And then he said that the time-honoured magic words, my views were taken out of context. So, well, what context would they have been in that would have excused that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a very common Christian apologist argument about people who say how, you know, negative things about the Bible. And say, oh, you're taking it out of context. And go, okay, well, what context is it okay to beat your slave to death?
It's like a review on a poster, isn't it? The only context would be, it would be unacceptable for me to say, and then say the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say it. That's the only context in which that would be an acceptable thing to say, in that you're caveating it. Here's the version of the politician's apology. I've got two examples. So there's Priti Patel in November 2020. So this was after a report had emerged that she'd bullied members of her staff. Kind of thing that seems to follow. Who was the other one? There was somebody else that was got rid of because of bullying, where he complained that the bar was set too low for bullying. Oh, no, it's, you know, yeah, it needs to be way higher. Stuff I was doing.
You're just going
to
call everything bullying.
When I was at school, yeah. So a report had emerged that she had bullied members of the staff, although she was consequently not sacked by Boris Johnson because she'd apologised, obviously, and here's the apologise.
Your behaviour will be deemed as bullying. Do you accept those findings?
Well, first of all, I have given an unreserved apology about that, and it's important to recognise in terms of the code that the Prime Minister is the arbiter of that code, and he makes the judgments accordingly as well.
I just wonder what your view is.
My view is on the record. My view is absolutely on the record, and I've given an unreserved apology to anybody that has been upset by anything that has taken place.
What are you apologising for? What behaviour of yours are you apologising for?
If people felt upset.
So I'm accused of bullying. I'm apologising if people were upset as a result of what I did. Not, I'm apologising for bullying people and causing them upset. I'm sorry that they're upset, which is what Dominic Raab was, the other guy.
The kind of implication is some people get very easily upset, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all you've got to do is bully them a little bit and they get very upset. Yeah, Dominic Raab was the same. I think the bar has been set too low. But some people get, you know, you whack them on the back of the head or you pull their chair out. Some people are very sensitive. They get very easily upset. So I've made a full and unabashed apology on the fact that I'm sorry that people are upset. I'm sorry that you're crying.
Sorry that you're so easily upset.
After I punched you in the face, yeah. I'm really sorry. I want you to say sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry that you're crying. I'm sorry that you're such a wuss. Yeah, that's the kind of things that bullies say, isn't it? And then Boris Johnson, who previously denied the existence of long COVID, said this at the COVID inquiry earlier this year.
The words that I scribbled in the margins of submissions about long COVID have obviously been now publicised, and I'm sure that they have caused a hurt and offence to a huge numbers of people who do indeed suffer from that syndrome. And I regret very much using that language and should have thought about the possibility of future publication.
So it seems to me he's sorry for the fact that stuff that he as Prime Minister would have written in the margins of a report might get published. I don't know that he's apologising for the fact that people suffered this syndrome, which he poo-pooed and are still, and received no shrift from him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically, I didn't think anyone was going to see it.
And I'm sorry that it got published. So what are you exactly apologising for? Well, I'm sorry that it got published. Whilst we're talking about the Tory party, why not? So Robert Jemrick was interviewed earlier in July by Nick Robinson on BBC's Political Thinking. And they're talking about what went wrong after the election. And this is what Robert Jemrick said.
If we fail to act now with seriousness and change the Conservative Party, then things undoubtedly could get worse. That's why I think that we have to respond to this challenge by repenting for some of the mistakes we've made, such as on immigration, but not just on immigration.
You use the word repenting. It's a fascinating word. It's got religious overtones, the sense that your beliefs were wrong, and that you need to say to the public, we sinned, we need to repent, we need to cleanse our soul, we have got... Do you see it in those sorts of terms?
I do. I think if you speak to people on the doorstep, and I've certainly spent the last 8 weeks doing that day in, day out, people are angry and frustrated in this country, not just at the Conservative Party, at the whole political establishment, for failure to tackle some of these issues, whether that's accepting that we need to leave the European Convention on Human Rights, adopting a very clear position on illegal migration, saying that legal migration should be capped by Parliament at the tens of thousands. And if we want to regain their trust, they have to see that we understand that. And that means being very clear about what we got wrong and beginning to put it right.
He's saying we should repent. And the magic words he's employing prevent him talking about anything other than more policy statements. He's making a leadership bid.
Well, yeah.
And he's using policy statements rhetoric about not being right-wing enough.
Yeah.
And using that's what those
I,
magic
That's what
words.
I thought when I was listening to it. I was like, Is he saying the problem was that we didn't accept quickly enough that we have to leave the European Court of Human Rights?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
and we didn't do enough.
That was one of the big things that everyone was like, I can't believe they're thinking of leaving the European Court on Human Rights.
Yeah, why are we getting rid of the Tories? Well, because they haven't left the European
Because they don't agree with human rights. Yes, they are anti-human rights.
They're complaining about actually, what they should be repenting about were Partygate, Eat Out to Help Out, locking down too late and opening too early, not screening patients being returned to care homes and consequently killing a lot of old people with COVID, illegally proroguing Parliament, the no-deal Brexit, Dominic Cummings not being sacked over Barnard Castle, Priti Patel not being sacked over bullying, the two-child benefit limit, increase in food bank, shit in every waterway in the country, Liz Truss, etc., etc. Those are the things that you should be repenting over and apologizing for, surely. But what he's doing, he's apologizing to the completely made up electorate in his mind that were disappointed that their extreme isolationist, nationalist, racist, populist stance didn't cut through, not the actual real ones.
It was a journey I went on listening to it.
Yeah.
Because initially I thought, oh, I don't mind repent. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
When he's talking about, look, yes, we fundamentally had the wrong idea.
Fucked
we did the wrong
up.
Things.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, yes. You fucking did. And then he was like,
yeah.
Yeah, we weren't nearly right-wing enough. And I was like, what?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. Not, yeah, so not the actual real ones. And I'm thinking, well, either is it, you know, is that kind of the whole tin ear thing? He's, you know, they were listening to what people were saying on the thing, but they weren't.
They somehow heard that.
Yes, yeah, yes, yeah. Is it willful blindness? So he's just ignoring all the other stuff because that's really too awful to talk about. And if they did talk about that, they would never, ever get back in because of just that image of the Queen sitting entirely alone in Westminster Abbey at the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh whilst a caseload of booze was being wheeled.
Yeah, literal suitcase of booze.
Literal suitcase of booze was being wheeled down Downing Street. You know, that thing, you can't talk about that. So if they actually said, we fucked up and this is where we fucked up, it's, you know, in the words of Priti Patel, appalling that they don't do that. Tsunami came in and we lost red counties, knocking on the voters' door. Picture this, I have such a short arse falling through Westminster's floor. How could I forget that we had shown them that we'd all partied? All this time, Keir was standing there at number 10 looking to lead. Got fewer votes when they counted.
Wasn't me.
Saw me scraping from the barrel.
Wasn't me.
Coming third on the recount.
A fallacy.
Even fewer than a Davy.
Well, fallacy.
Jumping lower than a Bungee.
It wasn't me.
Couldn't hear what the poll said.
A fallacy.
I'm now the opposition leader.
A fallacy.
Gotta say although it's over.
In the wild. A fallacy.
In the wild.
A fallacy.
Rick Rock and Shaggy there for their 1999 Magic Words hit. It wasn't me.
Excellent.
All you need to say. It wasn't me.
And in the fallacy in the wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from the incredible Burt Wonderstone, Steve Carell film.
I have millions of ideas for tricks, Burt. I mean, did you really think I wanted to be a magician's assistant?
Yes.
No, Burt, make me your partner.
Poor sweet Nicole.
My name's Jane.
My act is incredibly intricate. It is the product of years of study and training, and no offense, but you are a girl.
You gotta be kidding me.
Not that girls can't do magic, it's just that men are better at it.
You know what? I don't want you staying here. And I don't want to work with you.
What, just because I said that men are better than women? I said no offense, therefore you cannot be offended. Legally.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
He said
there
it. You go. He said the words.
No offense, but.
So, she has no recourse there. She has to not
it's
take
like
offense.
Saying, it's like saying, I'm not being funny, but.
Yeah.
And then they say, and my rejoinder to that certain kind of person said, yeah, not being funny, but. And then they say something which isn't.
It's never funny.
Always complete. Always particularly racist. I get so. No, you're right. You weren't being funny. That was, I'm not being racist, but, some of my best friends are.
Yeah.
You know, insert minority group here.
And speaking of, I'm not being racist, but.
Yeah.
Our next example comes from the brilliant Cop Rock, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
And this is a song about not being racist.
Don't get me wrong, I keep an open mind. I know what's what when your butt's on the line. And when you need a man to cover your back. Where blue is blue and black is black.
So he started out by saying, don't get me wrong,
yeah,
but you can't trust black policemen. But, you know, don't take this the wrong way.
Don't take it the wrong way.
No.
And then I'm saying something
to say the thing
horribly wrong.
That is awful.
Yeah.
But I caveated it beforehand, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And don't take this the wrong way is exactly our next example, which is from American Dad.
Right.
Why can't I go to the good mall and get a summer job there?
Because that's our mall, and we don't want to risk running into you. Don't take this the wrong way, but you're kind of a nerd.
What is the right way to take that?
Not like that.
Yeah. When you say don't take this the wrong way, you're going to say something that someone will take the way you intend it, and that's the wrong way.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But that, so, and what it shifts the blame on onto the listener.
Yeah.
It
you're being a bitch if you
releases you take for it the responsibility wrong way. For being an ass. Yeah. Exactly.
So, our final example from Bob's Burgers is a very common caveating and arguably one that is used importantly in kind of legal contexts when you want to say stuff, but you're not sure if you're being accurate. And legally, you want to protect yourself. And this is an episode where a wolf has escaped from the Wonder Wharf.
It's been called the Beast of the Bay, the Monster of the Marina, and the Wonder Wolf. But whatever you call it, it's allegedly extremely dangerous and allegedly out for blood, wreaking alleged havoc on our quiet little community, allegedly.
Yeah. If you say allegedly enough, it doesn't matter if you're telling the truth or not. That's...
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, that's it. How it works, in my opinion.
So
we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Listen, the whole game is clearly rigged. It's obviously got bugs and teething troubles that still need ironing out. Okay, so there have been wins, some wins against the odds, I might add. Clear victories, to be sure, but I'm not happy about it.
So our theme this week is Trump at the RNC decided that he would tell the story of the assassination attempt.
Oh, okay.
He said that this would be a thing he would only ever do once because it's too painful for him. To recount this traumatizing story. He's since told it several times. But but the way he told it was so fucking weird. He didn't write it himself, but he did add a few ad libs. And it is so kind of Barbara Taylor Bradford, like William Faulkner kind of descriptive, laying the scene of this. It's not like... If you were in a traumatic situation and you were telling someone about what happened to you, this is fucking not how you would tell a story.
No. If you were writing
you wouldn't lay it out in these terms while also managing to fit in ways to boast about yourself. So.
Yeah.
So these are all from that section of his his unifying speech. Statement number one. It was a warm, beautiful day in the early evening in Butler Township in the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Music was loudly playing and the campaign was doing really well. I went to the stage and the crowd was cheering wildly. Everybody was happy. I began speaking very strongly, powerfully and happily, because I was discussing the great job my administration did on immigration at the southern border. We were very proud of it.
So many happies in there. Wow. Wow.
Birds were singing. Bees were buzzing. It was just...
Yeah, exactly. It's going to go into zip.
Okay. Statement number two.
Birds on my shoulder. It's a fact. It's actual.
Statement number two. Yeah. Behind me and to the right was a large screen that was displaying a chart of border crossings under my leadership. The numbers were absolutely amazing. In order to see the chart, I started to, like this, turn to my right and was ready to begin a little bit further turn, which I'm very lucky I didn't do, when I heard a loud whizzing sound and felt something hit me really, really hard on my right ear. I said to myself, "Wow, what was that? It can only be a bullet."
Yeah. Not like a bee, because it was a warm, beautiful day in the early evening in the township. of the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where there are bees. Yeah.
And okay. Statement number three. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I immediately knew what was happening. And as I swiftly and gracefully dropped to the ground, I saw the assassin on the roof. And I started to point him out to the brave Secret Service agents who rushed to the stage and shielded me from harm. I wanted to stand up because I could hear the crowd behind me, really a massive crowd, were crying because they thought I was dead, but the agents wouldn't let me up. It was only then that I realised I was drenched in blood.
It's only then I realised I'd lost my shoes. And like you kind of focus when you're completely drunk and you're focused on one thing, this one stupid, banal thing. Like where I've
that was absolutely the most relatable thing he's ever done. It's like, where are my shoes?
Where's just completely... my shoes. Yeah. I've put it down somewhere. And I've dropped it. It's in my turnips. Yeah. Right. I was drenched in blood. Was it drenched? Okay. All right. Well, I quite like that. You can hear the music actually under "It Was a Warm, Beautiful Day." It's like the opening scene of The Waltons. It's a beautiful warm day.
On Walton Mountain.
On Walton. Yeah, on the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. That is so good. It actually is like the Sylvanian family kind of stuff. Yeah, okay, quite like that one. Strongly powerful and happily. That I like that because it's clunky, because everybody was happy, and then happily. He's probably picked that up and said it again. Nobody would write happy twice in the two sentences. It's just bizarre. And it can only be a bullet. Really hard on my right ear. Okay, swiftly and gracefully, I like. And the fact that the Secret Service agents only rushed after he had said them and had pointed out to the assassins, of course, then that would add to his omniscience that he's completely aware of everything that's going on, even though the security services weren't. Okay, all right. I think that... Even though they're drenched in blood. See, the things I'm tussling with, it can only be a bullet. Is he going to have thought of that? And I was drenched in blood. Okay, I'm going to go with number two as the one that you made up.
Okay, so the other two, which are you more convinced by?
I think the warm, beautiful day in the early evening about the township of the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
The literary equivalent of "it was a dark and stormy night."
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I've changed my mind now. Right, go on.
Number one.
Yeah.
It's real.
It was a warm, beautiful day in the early evening in Butler Township, in the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Music was loudly playing, and the campaign was doing really well. I went to the stage, and the crowd was cheering wildly. Everybody was happy. I began speaking very strongly, powerfully, and happily. Because I was discussing the great job my administration did on immigration at the southern border. We were very proud of it.
Oh, that's the kind of paragraph that usually ends with, and then I did a backflip and everybody cheered. It's like, it's just fucking...
Yeah. Or I woke up and it was all a dream. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. It's just... Oh, no. No,
there's a competition on Twitter. I forget the name of the account, but it's Things That Never Happened, and it's a it's a competition. They collect things through the year of stuff that's posted on social media, and it is all people writing like this about times that they confronted injustice in KFC or whatever.
And
everybody cheered for them, and the manager paid for their meal, and like it's just they're the hero in their own little story.
Yeah, and all the workers made an arch with the whole series of golden arches, and I walked out with it, and everybody stood up and applauded. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they go, no, we've seen the video. Basically, what you did was you punched a Karen in the face. That was it, and people just went, oh, "That was it." Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was a thing he said.
Well, it's just more of his kind of self-eulogizing to either he's pretending to believe it or he absolutely believes it. I think he absolutely believes it, that he got to, that he would say to people, yeah, you need to write something. We've got to freeze this moment in time. We've got to note down every single atom. And
make it sound like the beginning of a Disney film.
Exactly, yeah. One of those ones where you embed somebody into an animated landscape. Yeah, that's what we're doing. And, you know, none of that Shrek nonsense when it's all turned on its head and ruined.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be the proper lush one that everybody falls in love with, the hero cries at the death of a reindeer. Yeah, yeah.
So... You also think that number three is real.
Yeah.
And number three.
Yeah.
Is fake news.
Oh, nice one. Yeah. You see, it's the same shape as the one above. In that it was the, dumped it up to Jim. Don't you then realize a dredge of blood? Dumped it up to Jim. Yeah.
He did boast about the crowd size.
Nice.
That's the one thing that I kept. But that was inevitable.
Swiftly and gracefully.
He can't talk about a crowd without talking about how big the crowd is. But,
Everything else,
he didn't claim to point out the assassin to the Secret Service.
Right.
Or that he swiftly and gracefully dropped the crowd.
Gracefully. No, I regret that choice now. Because,
none of them are more plausible. I don't blame you.
No. That's absolutely not. I mean, it was so, it is just as implausible. I heard a loud whizzing sound. I felt something really, really, really hard.
So,
it can only be a bullet. I was drenched in blood.
So, number two.
Really, isn't it?
Is indeed real.
Behind me and to the right was a large screen that was displaying a chart of border crossings. Under my leadership, the numbers were absolutely amazing. In order to see the chart, I started to, like this, turn to my right and was ready to begin a little bit further turn, which I'm very lucky I didn't do, when I heard a loud whizzing sound and felt something hit me really, really hard on my right ear. I said to myself, wow, what was that? It can only be a bullet.
So, one of the things about this, among all the other things I don't believe, is who turns their head a bit and thinks to themselves, you know what?
I'll just turn a bit more.
I'm about to continue turning my head. But fortunately, he didn't even have a chance to do that. I had the opportunity to decide that was the next movement my head was going to do, but hadn't actually put it into action yet.
Executed it. Yeah. Because that's what you do when you turn to look at a chart and you think, oh, I can't quite see that chart.
I might just turn a bit further.
Oh, then I might be able to see it.
Yeah, you have that internal narrative going on.
Yeah. And that'd be the kind of speed that Trump does it at.
That's his thinking speed.
There's
a bit of a lag between the old brain coming up with something and then the body doing it.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's like pre-Bluetooth, so it's quite slow. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like it's not even as fast as a SCSI connection. Yeah, and then he'll think, oh, hang on a minute, I've got to breathe in first because I haven't done that for a while, and then breathe out. It's like, you know, forget Carter and his chewing and walking at the same time. No, this is Trump who's can't turn his head. And then turn his head a bit more without stopping to think about it in between.
You have to do it in stages, don't you?
Whilst attempting to look at something. Yeah, yeah. I was just going to look at that over there. Oh, I can't quite see it. I must turn a bit more. Okay, what I'll need to do next is turn a little bit
this
more.
This is how I thought turning a car worked before I learned to drive. I thought, you know, you turn the amount you reckon you need to turn, and you either get it right or wrong, and then you adjust.
Yeah,
so that's what I thought. I didn't realize that, like, you're getting feedback the entire time you're turning, and therefore you can adjust as you go.
Yeah.
It just hadn't occurred to me, but that's how Trump turns his head. He turns it a bit. He turns it the amount he reckons, then evaluates whether that was right or not. And then goes, oh no, I'm going to need to turn a bit more.
I'm going to have to do a bit more. How much more? I don't know. Some less than that, but a bit more than I thought it was, but not as much. Perhaps he overshoots. Perhaps he's overshot in the past.
Maybe he turned too far sometimes and then has to turn back a bit.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so he's a bit wary of it. There's that little bit of learning he's done, yeah. I'm a little bit wary of going too far, so I'll just undershoot rather than overshoot and have to correct it, because then I'll just look a fool. Yeah.
So it's worth mentioning, I think,
that
the amazing chart was not true.
No.
The chart of immigration
figures.
The actual
achievements.
Yeah, the main thing that wasn't true about it was that there was a big arrow pointing to when Trump left office, which matched up coincidentally with the lowest immigration in American history.
Oh, really?
The chart was actually of apprehensions at the border.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it went all the way down to pretty much zero. And then they did a big arrow saying Trump leaves office. And then it went all the way back up again.
Right.
And indicating that Biden was responsible for all those things.
Oh, okay.
The only trouble is that they put the arrow not January 20th, 2021, but right in the middle of the pandemic, when all the borders of all the countries were closed everywhere.
Right. Nice.
So there was very little illegal immigration going on during COVID.
Because
nobody could go anywhere.
In the air, yes. They weren't out in the wild.
But actually, by the time he left office, it was going way back up again. But
because he did fuck all about it. Yes.
Get in the way of a chart.
Good chart.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
wow,
we have some social contestants.
Oh yeah.
On Patreon, Will M says number one is fake. In my opinion, I haven't been following the news at all lately. Well done, Will. I don't know how that's possible, but yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Oh God, if only we could do that. Yeah. Oh, that must be bliss. It must be like a warm, beautiful day in the early evening in Butler Township. Yeah. All the time where Will is.
Maybe this is how Will learned that there was an assassination.
Yeah, sorry. In which case, sorry for pricking that bubble. Yeah.
Rene Z says, all his fucking lies are said by him as the truth. Are you changing the rules and making all three real? I'm choosing number one as fake news. It sounds too much like it's written by someone with skill at writing fiction. Two and three sound like his recreation of what happened.
Nice. Yeah.
Richard says, I think number two is fake. Has the Donald ever heard a bullet that wasn't in a movie? He certainly didn't hear any when he was in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines all at once.
Yeah.
Anders says, I'm going to close my eyes and bite the bullet like sledgehammer. Number three is fake. Nice. Trust me, I know what I'm doing. Which is, Anders, a brilliant sledgehammer quote. It's a niche show, Sledgehammer, with David Rash. Mm-hmm. Not many people will necessarily have got that reference, but I'm there with you, Anders.
And it worked.
Scott says, I think I heard number two. Number three is just so bizarre, I want it to be true, so I choose number one as fake.
I know, that's the thing I slip into
Often. Invisible Unicorn said, holy steaming dog shit, he really said two of those. Number two seems like he's rambling, so it's too easy. The other two read like pulp fantasy novels, and the sentences are too complete. One is fake.
Wow. Okay. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Yes, I think you're right. That the Faulkner-esqueness of the that obviously, yeah, because he'd never written them.
Yeah.
Obviously, the other ones he kind of added stuff too, but the opening's that it's a warm, beautiful day.
So unfortunately, that means that you did not get a
point
this time.
No. So, not happy about that.
It's a
you know, whilst I'm quite happy to play along. But I'm just not happy about it. Still, yeah, damn fine. A damn fine quote that time, about swiftly and gracefully. Beautiful. Beautiful.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called A New Candidate is Not a Logical Fallacy. Because while we talked at some length in our emergency bonus episode last week about the fact that Kamala was probably going to be taking over from Joe Biden after he dropped out, she's now had her first, first 4 days, almost 3.5 days as the presumptive candidate. Yeah, it was Sunday that he dropped out, Sunday night, our time. And it's looking pretty much a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, because didn't she get, she had to get like 1976?
Yeah, the delegates in the primaries had voted for the Biden-Harris ticket, but they still did, they didn't automatically go to Harris. And there was kind of some question of, how that would work.
Okay.
But, and obviously the Republicans are saying that you can't, you know, it's totally subverting democracy, which is not something they would ever do, to just install her as the candidate.
Yeah.
And because, you know, the primary voters voted for Joe Biden. And also, it must be against the law to change what candidate is. And of course, they haven't had the DNC yet. They haven't had the convention. So he wasn't the candidate yet. He was just the person that everyone reckoned was probably going to be the candidate.
Was going to be the one. A bit like Trump was possibly the person that everyone reckoned would get.
Until the RNC. And she needs to secure the party vote. She needed 1,976 out of the 3,900, nearly 4,000 delegates that exist. And she passed the 1976 number pretty early on Wednesday.
Right.
Now we are at a point where 3,284 delegates out of the 3,900 have pledged to vote for her. And 626 of the others, it's just because the Washington Post hasn't managed to get hold of them yet to find out who they're voting for.
Oh, okay.
So there's 39 who've said they're undecided.
More of the undecideds that we talked about last time.
No one said they're voting for anyone else, but almost 3,300 as of now, this is Thursday night, UK time, they've said that they are going to vote for Kamala Harris. So basically, she's got it locked up. They are actually not going to wait for the convention to solidify that, because there was already a system in place where they could have a kind of virtual roll call, which I think is, I don't know if it's done over like Zoom or something, but where they essentially all say, yeah, we're definitely voting for this person. They were already getting ready to do that for Joe.
Right.
But they decided to kind of...
Oh, ahead of the Congress.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Just so that they could kind of start getting some momentum, I think, before the convention came along.
Yep.
And they didn't do that, but now they've reinstated that potential system. I think that is what they're probably going to do, and they're going to do it before August 7th. Because while most states don't have a thing about who has to be the candidate because of the fact that Joe was never technically the candidate, Ohio is the kind of closest that there is a potential issue. And for them, it's essentially whoever is the candidate as of August 7th. So that's, what, nearly 2 weeks before the convention. The convention is August 19th to 22nd.
Yep.
So to head off any potential challenges in Ohio, they're going to get Kamala essentially signed off by all delegates in a virtual roll call before August 7th. And that will mean that there isn't really any plausible legal argument that anyone can make that she shouldn't be the candidate. They'll still make the arguments, but none of them will
of course
go anywhere.
Because
and they're the kind of arguments that if they were to try and take them to like the Supreme Court, for example, where who knows what would happen, that whole process of going through the various steps to get there would take far longer than the election itself.
Yeah.
It won't matter by that point. It'll be moot.
They're just trying to come up with all sorts of things, saying, oh, you can't do that because we don't like it. It's not fair.
Oh, yeah, they'll challenge her on everything they can possibly challenge her on.
Right, yeah.
Which is really nothing. So they'll challenge her on all the stuff they can't possibly challenge her on, and and the courts will go, fuck off, and it won't make any difference. But by the time the convention comes around, there will be she'll be the nominee officially, and the convention is going to be lit, if I can use that phrase as a 50-year-old white man.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, of course you can. Because she's being brat.
It is going to be somewhat more exciting in terms of the famous people than the Republican convention was. Which boasted
what more exciting
which boasted
than
Hulk Hogan and Dana Hulk White.
I wanted to say Ice-T then, but I don't know.
No, Ice-T wouldn't vote for Trump. No.
No. No.
But apparently Hollywood has been kind of actively ringing the Harris campaign to say, what can we do? How can we help? Like they have just constantly been on the phone. Every time they put their phone down, a different major Hollywood star calls them up and goes, how can we help to do this?
Wow.
Because enthusiasm for Kamala has been just insane. It's off the charts. It's in a good way. I confess that you probably heard our kind of our immediate response, emergency our emotional broadcast. Response to, in our last emergency episode, I didn't like the way it happened, and I was concerned about whether it was ultimately going to be the right thing. I was, as I said at the time, I was optimistic, and I felt like there was definite advantages and there were disadvantages. I was wrong to be so cautious. I am absolutely delighted to see the huge level of enthusiasm that has come out over the last 3 days.
That got raised, what was it, $80 million?
$81 million just in small dollar donations. That doesn't count the big donors that were donating to PACs, because the amount they wanted to donate was way higher than the amount you're allowed to donate directly to the campaign.
Right.
So in small dollar donations, $81 million in 24 hours, which is the most a presidential campaign has ever raised in history in a single day. And of that, a huge number, like 500,000 people at least, that was their first donation of the 2024 election.
Wow.
They hadn't like previously been Democrat donors or donated to down ballot races or anything else. They were like, fuck me, Kamala's in, we are donating, we need to get her. Well, this is great. Yes,
exactly. That's the visible manifestation of the sort of national endorsement of the idea.
It's a ridiculous amount. And that was just in the first 24 hours. We're as we said, more than 3 days in. It's over $126 million now. That's more than doubled by the high figure donors who've donated to PACs. So the Democratic Party as a whole has taken in well over a quarter of a million over the last 3 days.
Quarter of a billion.
Yes, yep. Quarter of a billion in the last 3 days. So, which is...
And just that doesn't huge. Even include whatever was raised for the Biden
No, that's ticket. That's not including the 96 million that they already had on hand that she that got transferred into her campaign account.
Wow.
So, that is enormous in terms of the value that they can get out of that with the campaign staff that they have who are it turns out fucking awesome, because they have just turned on a dime from all the stuff they were doing to promote Biden into immediately promoting Kamala and doing it really effectively with like memes and things like that. Charlie XCX in the UK, she called Kamala brat, which is a song apparently. And they, Kamala HQ turned their kind of Twitter header lime green to match with that. And they started putting out memes of that. And they, Trump said in a rally speech, oh, she's got this line where she says, you know, she's the prosecutor and I'm the felon. It's the prosecutor against the felon. And they basically clipped that out and added Kamala saying, I approve this message after it, and put that out as a thing.
Nice.
They put out a press release today that the title of it was something like 78-year-old criminal is confused or something like that, is having difficulty. They have been absolutely brilliant. Starting essentially from scratch, they didn't have a lot of notice that this was happening. Some people reasonably high up in Biden's campaign didn't, like, found out that he was stepping down on Sunday when it was announced. So it wasn't like this was completely widespread and everyone in Kamala's camp and everyone in Biden's camp knew about it. But they've really fucking stepped up and they're doing a great job.
Yeah.
And the money that has been raised will enable them to do that at a much bigger level and nationally and in those targeted areas, which are going to mean
that which she is like able to seven states, isn't it? The actual ones that would kind of matter.
There's a lot that it's important that they are there and campaign in and kind of show up at. But yeah, there's in terms of the ones that have a potential to flip and make a big difference. There's not that many. There's probably 9 or 10 that have some that could be considered purple that might be important not to lose. Yeah.
Mm.
She's also been endorsed by almost everyone you can be endorsed by in terms of Democrats. So all 23 of the 23 Democratic state governors, of Democrat senators, 46 out of 51 have already endorsed her. 199 out of 212 House Democrats have endorsed her. Nancy Pelosi, who hadn't previously endorsed her today, there's a lot of stories saying that Obama is getting ready to endorse her. And we talked the other day about the fact that he didn't immediately endorse her and whether that was a problem or whether he was going to. The more recent news is that they wanted his to be a kind of standalone special thing and not get lost in the mix.
Well, because my thought was that he was more concerned about the
process.
Lack of opacity on the process. Yeah, and I think once the process has, well, it's done. They've gone through the process.
To all intents and purposes, it's done.
Yeah, then he'll come out and now they can make it into something that looks a bit special.
Yeah. There's also, apparently, when Nancy came out and endorsed her, the insiders and the people who talked to the insiders were saying that it has been a bit of a plan for the more senior Democrats to stagger their endorsements of her to keep that in the news cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, if everyone did it on day one, that's huge, but then people stopped talking about it. every time that now that they do it, they can say, you know, yet another one. There's look at the numbers. She's got basically the entire party behind her. Talk about unity, which is what, you know, the Republicans claimed their conference was about.
Talked about for about 5 minutes.
It is a historically unified Democratic Party right now.
Mm.
Also, on top of the delegates, the endorsements, and the massive fundraising, they have signed up 74,000 new volunteers to work on the Harris campaign in just 3 days of just people showing up and saying, what can we do? How can we help? And vote.org announced that in the first 48 hours after Joe stepped down and Kamala stepped up, they had a 700% increase in new voter registrations, which means 38,500 new voters in the US registered in 48 hours.
Wow.
And of those new voters, 83% were people between 18 and 34.
Oh, wow.
So it's energizing young people, the younger demographic, in a way that they weren't before, in a way that people were looking at Biden and Trump and going, yeah, this isn't us. They don't represent us. And that's more, incidentally, in 2 days than happened when Taylor Swift said people should register to vote back in in September.
Yeah.
So,
wowee.
That's huge. And that is the kind of thing.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. Wow. With the new voters, new volunteers, money, you know, big donors coming back as well to the party, celebrities endorsing at the DNC, all the delegates, all of the Democratic politicians, you can't get really more enthusiasm and more unity than this.
Yeah.
And it is reminiscent of 2008 and Obama.
Yeah.
Which
I
couldn't have hoped on Sunday. I was like, I was
thinking,
trying to be hopeful about it. And hope is the thing now, I think, that people are starting to feel. And I mean, because of the last 8 years that we've had, it's such an unrecognizable feeling. It's something we're not used to now.
Since Obama,
In fact, one of the a Democratic strategist told CNN about like why there's been such a change from people basically being resigned to but behind Biden to this.
Yeah.
They said, I don't think people realised how worried they were until they had hope.
There you go.
And I think that's right. I think now, all of a sudden, people are like, oh, you mean it doesn't have to be probably shit. We could actually maybe have something good.
Yeah. We haven't got to... Yes, exactly. Well,
this feels weird.
You haven't got to vote with your nose pinched against the smell. You know, you can actually vote for something positively rather than as a kind of reaction against the negative. Something popped up in my feed of Gerald Ford answering a little girl's question in 1989, something like that. Little girl said, do you think there will ever be a female president? And he said, yeah, what will happen is there will be a female vice president and the president will die in office and then the vice president will take over. And then after that, look out, because there will never be a male candidate after that. And he was, you know,
it's a weird answer to give a little girl, but still.
But it was a seriously thought out thing. I think he was acknowledging the misogynist aspects of American politics. Yeah. But if you could break through that barrier.
I think that's the thing is the concern I was expressing on Sunday was that there was that misogynist and racist side of some people.
Yeah.
And I had not been sufficiently optimistic, I think, now in where we are about the other people stepping up, about the people who don't feel like that and don't accept that, but people are fucking stepping up and that's great, and that's what we need. And if there's stuff you can do, now is a great time to start doing that.
Just do it. It's kind of the triumph of the progressive notion. There's this kind of, well, I was talking about this on Sunday, that our feeds are somewhat skewed because we're looking at Trump for, you know, the interests of the podcast, but it gets somewhat skewed as to Trump's reading of Biden's presidency, that he's the worst president ever. And so therefore you don't get to see, you know, the Affordable Health Care Act stuff, and all of the progressive things get suppressed in our consciousness and in the national. I got this feel that progressiveness has been suppressed in the national consciousness, and Kamala Harris has enabled people to embrace what Biden has done and think, oh, for fuck's sake, yes, we did do all of this. It's actually possible to do this in this increasingly right-wing, suppressive, Gilead-esque political environment.
Yeah.
We can be progressive and celebrate that progressiveness. And don't forget that she was our candidate of choice.
Absolutely.
But I think mine was probably mine was AOC probably.
She's not even eligible.
No. But it wasn't at the time we did that test of how left-wing are you, and I was like, you know, 98% or something.
I think you were Bernie Sanders probably. But, you know, it was, I think it was the first Democratic primary debate in 2020 was the one where I said, okay, Kamala's going to be the next president. And I was wrong about but I was just wrong temporarily. So,
exactly. Yeah, next but one. Next you just stopped the sentence too
and
soon.
The attacks that have come at her from the right have been largely predictable of what we said of racism and misogyny and accusing her of sleeping her way to the top and that kind of stuff. In fact, to the extent that apparently even the Republican leadership are going, look, guys, can we just chill it with the racism?
Wow.
It's a bit much.
Yeah.
And like, let's not call her a DEI hire and things like that, because everyone knows what we mean. But there's also been some more idiosyncratic attacks. of complaining about her laughing.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like one of there was a memo that was sent round by the national the Republican senatorial committee, which said she's weird, she likes Venn diagrams, and she laughs inappropriate times. And I'm like, how fucked up do you have to be? Where you're like, why is she laughing? What's that about? Why is she happy?
Well, exactly. Well, that's the thing, is it, that the right don't do funny, as we know. It's a fact. It's also very funny, but it's a fact. So they don't know. I mean, if you watch bloody J.D. Vance the other day talking about making a terrible joke about Mountain Dew being racist, and then leaving a gap in a very Liz Truss kind of way. Leave gap for laughter, it says on the teleprompter. You know, leave gap for laughter, and then say this. And nobody fucking laughed because it was the worst joke ever. It's like, you know, and we import 80% of our cheese, and that is terrible. Big gap, tumbleweed go through, cricket sound. And she expected a laugh there. J.D. Vance, it's exactly the same. They don't know how to do funny. So the fact that people do know how to, over on the left, quite happy to have a laugh at stuff and laugh happily and freely because they are quite joyous people. Kamala Harris, quite joyous.
Yeah,
and that's not a bad thing. Wouldn't you be if you've raised £81 million in a day just by being you? That would be something to, you know, have a bit of a chuckle about, a bit of a giggle.
Yeah. So, I feel hope, and it's weird.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we've done 150, there's 154 of these.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
All of them post Obama.
I don't remember if any of these sections of Is Not a Logical Fallacy have been positive, hopeful ones.
No.
Full of us going, look at this, isn't it great?
Oh my God, isn't it great?
I mean, maybe when Trump lost, then there probably was one we did.
But
well, it's a rare thing. Because normally these are about how shit it is and what awful thing Trump has done this week and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm very pleased to have one where it's just, look at all the awesomeness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. There's a T-shirt. Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
There's a well-known phrase variously attributed to Lincoln and Mark Twain. Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. Probably neither of them actually said it, but whoever did was almost certainly talking directly to Lauren Boebert. Following the Supreme Court's decision overturning Chevron deference, Lauren squared off in a congressional hearing against EPA Administrator Michael Regan. To be clear, the court's ruling held that courts no longer need to defer to the expertise of government agencies in interpreting ambiguous laws. Boebert did not get that, and she asked if the EPA were going to continue to implement unconstitutional regulations or if they're going to repeal them. To his credit, Regan didn't directly call her an idiot, but it was very much implied in his tone when he said, "Do you understand the ruling?" Beetlejuice Bobo cleverly replied, "Do you understand the ruling?" But unluckily for her, he actually did understand it and explained that they wouldn't be repealing anything because that's not what the court said, and then literally laughed in her face when she said they did and added, "This was a huge victory." If you happen to be a voter in Colorado's 4th Congressional District, Boebert's Democrat opponent, Tricia Calvarez, is not an idiot and could really use your help. Only one Democrat has won in the district in the last 50 years, and that was in 2008, partly thanks to the wave of down-ballot enthusiasm that followed Obama's candidacy. So if there's ever another chance, it's right now.
There you go. Trump mini-me and actor most likely to play Don Jr. in the movie adaptation of The Life of Trump, J.D. Vance, is the most popular vice president possible, according to Trump. Well, of course, because he'll suck up and do anything Trump says in order to curry favor in the hope he'll be thrown the tiniest tasty morsel from the encrusted corners of the Orange Messiah's burger-slavering maw. You know, a lot like Don Jr. Oddly, though, not oddly, according to poll numbers, J.D. Vance is the first non-incumbent vice presidential nominee to have a net negative favorable rating after a convention since 1980. His net rating is -6. Yes, -6. An Economist / YouGov poll found that 22% of 1,582 US adults viewed him favorably, whilst 31% viewed him unfavorably, and 48% had no opinion about him at all. A Marist poll found that just 31% of registered voters had a favorable impression of Vance, whilst 33% said they saw him unfavorably, and 36% said they were unsure or had never heard of him. It's as though people know Vance is a fake, and that Vance knows that Trump knows Vance is a fake. But of course, none of it matters. Trump won't let Vance drag him down. Look at those numbers, he'll say. 36 and 48%, those are the bigliest numbers. And I guess, though, that's what you want as your VP, someone who a third to a half of Americans had never heard of, so they don't forget who you are, eh, Donnie? Even better that he sounds exactly like you, because then they'll start thinking he is you, and so youthful and smart, just like that Kamala woman. Hey, we got no problems. Yeah, because that's how it works, right?
Say what you like about Republicans, nobody can deny that they respect law and order and always back the blue. Unless, of course, the blue is stopping them from doing something illegal. But I'm sure they have some excuse about that that helps them deal with the cognitive dissonance. But mostly, the authoritarians love a man in uniform. Take, for example, Michelle Fiore, a Republican former city council member in Las Vegas. When she was on the council, she led the charge to erect a statue of a police officer who was killed in the line of duty. For 6 months, she doggedly pursued donors to raise funds for the statue and almost single-handedly secured $70,000 in donations, which I'm sure would have been appreciated by the fallen officer's family and colleagues. If she hadn't stolen the money and spent it all on her daughter's wedding, rent, and other personal expenses.
What?
It's totally out of character for Fiori, who has hardly ever been involved in scandals, unless you count the hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxes she neglected to pay in the home healthcare business that she dissolved after avoiding multiple attempts by health department inspectors to look at her business records, or whatever it was she said at the Clark County Republican Party convention in 2020. The party won't repeat what she said, instead choosing to describe her comments as racially charged and calling them completely inappropriate, irresponsible, insensitive, and inaccurate in the statement they released disavowing her words. That's the Republican Party calling her unacceptably racist. There would be more to say about Michelle, but fortunately I don't think we'll be hearing from her again because she left politics and now she's been suspended from her job hearing court cases in rural Nevada. Oh yeah, did I forget to mention she was a judge?
What? I have no idea who is behind it. I know nothing about Project 2025. I disagree with some of the things they're saying, and some of the things they're saying are absolutely ridiculous and abysmal. Yep, that's one Donald J. Trump, ex-president and convicted felon, doing his usual thing of distancing himself from anything that might blow up in his face and reflect badly on him. Of course, if Trump wasn't unlike your typical grandpa and could actually interact with the interwebs, he could, like CNN did, review online biographies, LinkedIn profiles, news clippings for more than 1,000 people listed on published directories for the 110 organizations on Project 2025's advisory board, as well as the 200-plus names credited with working on Mandate for Leadership. And then he might well discover that overall, nearly 240 people have ties to both Project 2025 and to Trump, covering nearly every aspect of his time in politics and at the White House. And last Tuesday, the former Biden campaign posted dozens of examples of connections between Trump and Project 2025. Well, whilst many of Project 2025's priorities are aligned with the former president, especially on immigration and purging the federal bureaucracies, it's lately become a lightning rod for other ideas that Trump hasn't explicitly backed. Plans to ban pornography, reverse federal approval of the abortion pill and mifepristone, exclude the morning after pill and men's contraceptives from coverage mandated under the Affordable Care Act, make it harder for transgender adults to transition, and eliminate the federal agency that oversees the National Weather Service, and probably make the use of Sharpies mandatory. Perhaps in the somewhat short-lived spirit of post-assassination attempt unity and the dialing down of political violence, 3 days after Kevin Roberts, leader of the Heritage Foundation, the organization behind 2025, said in an interview that the country was in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be, Trump posted, "I know nothing about Project 2025." Perhaps Trump's narcissism will ultimately save us from Project 2025 insofar as he won't be able to stand that people around him are vying for power and are smarter than him. It's a fine balance that the architects of fascism must strike between maintaining the ego of the dumbass, unstable, strangely haired leader whilst getting him to believe that their final solutions are his own ideas. In an attempt to distance themselves from Trump, Project 2025 spokespeople say the document doesn't speak for any candidate or campaign. It's ultimately up to that president, who we believe will be President Trump, to decide which recommendations to use. Yeah, that president. Any president, not Trump necessarily. You think Kamala will do any of that? They're fascist people. It's a power grab. Read it. Weep. Gasp, be strong, vote blue, whatever you do.
I think, unfortunately for him, his new vice president, J.D. Vance, wrote the foreword for Kevin Roberts' book that is coming out soon about Project 2025.
There you go.
While we're basking in the honeymoon period of Kamala's campaign, her opponent is also celebrating some good news, a rare win in court. Not one of his criminal cases, since they're all in various states of fuckery, but in his defamation lawsuit against ABC. The network had motioned for the case to be dismissed, but the Southern District of Florida's Chief Judge, Cecilia Altanaga, ruled that the case can proceed. The current Republican candidate for president is, you see, disgusted, appalled, and personally harmed by the totally untrue and malicious statements of George Stephanopoulos, who pointed out that a judge affirmed that Trump had been found to have committed rape. That is, of course, what Judge Kaplan said, but the former president of the United States feels it's very important that everyone understand the jury only found that he sexually assaulted a woman, because technically, in New York, what he did isn't called rape, despite everyone knowing it's rape. A crucial distinction that the guy who still has the support of tens of millions of voters feels needs to be litigated. The judge in this case said, "To be clear, the court is not reaching the merits of plaintiff's claims. Defendants may very well convince a reasonable fact finder to follow Judge Kaplan's reasoning or to adopt other reasoning leading to the conclusion that Stephanopoulos' statements were not defamatory." But she found that while Stephanopoulos did reference the fact that this was Judge Kaplan's interpretation, he only did so fleetingly. I can't help but feel we should have some kind of standard where someone who's been found liable by a jury of any kind of sexual assault shouldn't get to be president. And it shouldn't matter whether New York law calls rape, rape.
Yeah, the fact that he's got to litigate that, what you're saying there is defamatory. Well, all she's reporting is that in another state, somebody called it this.
Yeah, his defense is, I didn't technically rape her. Judge Kaplan basically said that what he did would be considered by most people rape.
Yeah. Sometime back in March, Republican National Committee spokesperson Daniel Alvarez said that minority community outreach is more than bricks and mortar. We have 7 community centers. They will remain open. One of them is in Milwaukee, about a mile north of where the Republican National Conference was being held. Raw Story reports that 3 community members in what, according to a Brown University survey, is one of the most segregated cities in the country, have never seen anyone go in or out of the building. And they laughed at the drawings of Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Ronald Reagan and Trump on the walls. Why is it there? No, it's not one of those anomalous, abandoned, fully functioning buildings like in the capital of Cyprus, stuck in the neutral zone since 1973. The Wisconsin Republican Party webpage apparently refers to it as the Black Community Center, although Kansas Senate, who's listed as the office contact, left the Wisconsin GOP more than a year ago to join the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. It might be something to do with the fact that Milwaukee voted almost 79% for Joe Biden over Trump in 2020, although Wisconsin overall is one of the most purple states in the nation and will likely be critical to the fortunes of the eventual winner of the 2024 presidential election. It might thus be they think they can make inroads in a community not typically supportive of Republicans. Well, said community member Vicky Hobbs, they're not doing a good job. One door down, a sign informs passers-by that it is a black-owned building and asks people not to litter or tag it with graffiti. And the sign has the hashtag Justice for George, Black Lives Matter, Black Women Matter. You know, the kind of issues the GOP are so good at engaging with.
ABC isn't the only media organisation currently fighting a defamation case or two. The right-wing website Gateway Pundit is also in hot water for things they said about election workers Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss and Dominion employee Eric Coomer. Unlike ABC, they're not going with the thing we said was true defence, largely because the things they said were obviously not true. So instead, they came up with a different brilliant strategy. Tell even more lies, but this time to the court. The lie they told was that they're bankrupt. But it wasn't a very convincing lie, because they said they had $100,000 to $500,000 in liabilities and $500,000 to $1 million in assets, which is not what bankrupt means. What they seem to have done is confuse bankrupt with doing really well for themselves. Bankruptcy judge Mindy Mora noticed that they actually have lots of money, and when she looked at the real figures, found that their assets were 22 times the size of their liabilities, and questioned whether they'd filed for bankruptcy in good faith or to get out of paying people they defamed. Gateway Pundit cited the pending litigation rulings against them as a liability, but Judge Mora said, "That's not a basis for bankruptcy relief, it's the justice system in operation," and dismissed their bankruptcy claim. As a fun extra, when looking at the website's financials, she also discovered that they may have been operating in Florida for 3 years without a proper business license and could owe back taxes to the state. It's nice when the justice system works, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it's also the Barbra Streisand effect, isn't it? I mean, you just go, oh, no, we're totally bankrupt. And you look into it and you go, oh, fuck, you find all sorts of other things. In a relatively calm week in politics, this side of the pond, Keir Starmer removed the whip from seven Labour Party MPs who voted with the SNP's amendment to the King's Speech, which laid out Labour's 49 bills they'll be bringing in this Parliament. The SNP proposed that the two-child cap on benefits given to families be abolished and regretted that it wasn't in the King's Speech. Labour had protested at its introduction way back in 2017, and part of their promise to reduce child poverty could, the SNP argued, be effective at a stroke if they abolished this cap and allowed child benefit to be claimed for third and subsequent children. Many Labour MPs have been very vocal about it, quoting 300,000 people could be thus lifted above the poverty line. And many vocal supporters abstained, but many voted for the amendment, i.e. against the Labour government. Keir, in an effort to continue to be tough on dissent and tough on the causes of dissent, effectively ousted the seven MPs from the Labour Party. It's a shame, really. Whilst I guess he needs to be seen to be in control, it does mean that those agitators are now outside the tent pitting in rather than agitating from within. A show of strength or a dictatorial crushing of disagreement? Meanwhile, in the first PMQs with the roles reversed, it was pleasantly quiet from Rishi's side of the dispatch box. I guess he's got nothing to prove any longer. He even cracked a gag that whilst he wishes Team GB good luck in the Olympics, they ought not to look for him for advice on how to win. With the leadership contest set to last longer than the actual election campaign, and that was long, and him sitting in merely as caretaker leader of the opposition, I guess he figures, why bother? I'll recast myself as an agreeable statesman, look good on the Goldman Sachs application, and let the mealy-mouthed performance posturing be done by those vying to be the next leader. Fortunately, Suella Braverman's only supporter in that race appears to be Suella Braverman. Unfortunately, Priti Patel, Kemi Badenoch, James Cleverly, Robert Jenrick and Tom Tugendhat all have more support than that, and not one of them thinks that the centre ground is where they lost out. And speaking of the far right, Farage fucked off as soon as he could after the King's Speech in order to be seen at the RNC with other, now unemployed crazies, Liz Truss and Boris Johnson, all playing to empty rooms. Ha!
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. If you had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our newest patrons, the Pizza Dude Chronicles on TikTok, our strawman level patrons Colleen Layela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Aussie Onbank, Laura Tomsic, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED we could just call her Amber, though another listener recognised her at QED last year because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons Sharon Robinson, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much, guys, and welcome to our new patrons. Your support is very, very much appreciated.
You can connect with those awesome people, as well as us and other listeners, in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right, go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.